This is Jake, and I am a Game On minion. Because if I wasn't, I don't know what Brian and Andy would do to me.
This is Kyle, and I am an awesome Game On minion. Yeah.
Directly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com. Game on.
Gamer Nation, once again, you have found Game On. It's Monday, May 18th, 2009, and this is episode number 21. Today, we're beaming it directly into your headspace. I am, as always, your host, Brian. Some call me Fiddleback, others call me Tim. I never answer to Tim, but they call me that anyway. With me is the man who walks that fine line between sleeping and waking, and usually manages to trip over his own feet while doing so. Andy.
That's right. I am a professional zombie.
They pay for that now, do they?
Apparently. Anyways, the schedule I've worked this week, they paid for it.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I love them overnights. They're fun.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Okay, so Andy, what are we doing this week? What are we talking about?
Well, today we're continuing with part two of our RPG campaign discussion, and this time we're all about character. GM, NPCs, and player PCs all come to the fore on this one.
I'm looking forward to it. This would be part two. I love it. That means we've done like a series, or we're doing a series.
Yeah,
we can have a coherent thought that stretches more than 20 minutes. That's great.
Yeah, good luck on that one.
Upkeep phase.
Well, many thanks go out to Jake for his contribution to the bumpers you heard at the top of the show. We also want to extend a very special thank you to one of our youngest minions, Kyle. You are the awesomest minion. Thanks, Kyle.
Yeah, that was cool, indeed.
That was very cool. If you'd like to contribute a bumper to the show and announce your minion status, you can do so by emailing it to us at gameon@d20radio.com. We're more than happy to help you establish your alibi by carefully explaining to the authorities that you couldn't have done it. We didn't tell you to.
If only I had an alibi. Reel number 5 of Cinematic Attic hit the airwaves this week. Jed and Brev ply your ears with talk of summer blockbusters. They cover 28 of the summer's finest releases and tell you what to expect, what they like, and why Michael Bay is or is not everyone's favorite director. Transform and roll out to Cinematic Attic number 5, Summer Movie Blockbuster.
Yes. The Holocron entertained special guest Sam Witwer. GM Dave, Fiddleback, hey, I know that guy, and Mostly Joe talk planets, along with a Q&A session with Sam. Nearly 3 hours of podcasting goodness for you to listen to, and not one bit of it dull. Check out the Holocron for all your Star Wars The Old Republic needs in episode number 11, Date with a Star Killer. And I'm told that the Order of 66, or the Order 66, boy, I gotta keep those two straight. Order 66 will go out on Tuesday night this week, and they will be talking about the proceedings at ReaperCon over this last weekend.
Ah, ReaperCon.
So that'll be fun.
I wish I could have been there.
Mm-hmm. I wish I could have been anywhere.
Anywhere but here, yes. Share your thoughts about the lack of new shows this week with all the hosts at www.d20radio.com/forums and try to work out what they've all been up to that has prevented them from keeping your ears happy. You deserve happy ears. Tell them so.
Bits and pieces. There's news everywhere, Gamer Nation. We sifted through it and chose the niftiest bits and pieces just for you.
Indeed. Fantasy Flight Games has announced a new adventure game called Middle-Earth Quest, which is based on J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings book series. Specifically, the 17-year period between Bilbo's disappearance and the Ring's departure from the Shire, as described in the Fellowship of the Ring, as noted in the press release. Middle-Earth Quest is for 2 to 4 players ages 13 and up, with one player taking the role of Sauron and the other players serving as heroes who must fight to keep Sauron's dark plans from succeeding. To do this, they must complete quests and enlist the aid of various characters from Middle-Earth. The game includes plastic figures representing heroes and minions. Minions. More than 200 tokens and almost 500 cards. Visit Fantasy Flight's Middle-Earth Quest webpage for images of the art, cards, figures, and game board. Middle-Earth Quest is due out third quarter 2009 with a retail price of, hold on to your socks, kids, $80.
Yes, and I suspect the 500 cards has something to do with that price.
Yeah, quite possibly. An entire ream of paper and cardboard gone into to build this game. Yeah.
So I naturally bebopped over to Fantasy Flight, and I checked this thing out. And I was immediately reminded of another game that they do called RuneQuest.
It
looks remarkably similar.
Interesting. A nice twist on the game type.
Yeah. I'll probably end up with it at some point.
I know you will. You can't not buy anything that's Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I'm broken that way.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
You gotta see him in his Lord of the Rings underwear. He's so cute.
Wait a minute. I thought I told you to burn those pictures. Could have swore I did. Hexographer, or however you would like to pronounce that word. Hexographer allows a user to easily create world and wilderness hex maps in the classic D&D known world Mystara style. It can also be used to create wilderness battle mats and star maps for space combat battles using its cosmic icon set. Key features include over 50 terrain types and symbols, political, natural, infrastructure symbols, lines, woohoo, and labels, the ability to trace another map, random terrain generator, customized hex numbering, custom line styles and text, and much, much, much more. Yeah. Check it out at http://inkwellideas.com. And it's free.
Interesting. Now, is this something that you can print out, I assume?
Again, I played with it. It's a Java-based application. It does an excellent job. And, you can print out your finished results.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah,
very cool. I might be able to have a use for this.
Very cool.
Excellent. Cool. Oh, look. Wizards of the Coast has a new announcement. A new casual play format called Plane Chasers. If you like multiplayer versions of Magic, unpredictable shifts in mid-game, or just have fond memories of the old Vanguard cards, then this could be just the thing you've been waiting for. The Plane Chasers announcement was a little short on details in terms of how the new cards and rules will actually work, but we do know what you'll get with each Plane Chaser set. A 60-card deck with 8 rares, made of cards from all Magic sets, a Planar D6, a strategy guide and rules insert, plus 10 oversized plane cards. It looks like the 10-card Planar deck will cause the player to shift through different planes as the game progresses, adding new effects and altering the game's conditions. The plane cards will have brand new art, and the cards in the play deck will be tournament legal, with their own expansion symbol. As long as a particular card is otherwise legal in a given format, Plane Chase release events will be held September 4th through 6th, 2009. Watch MagicTheGathering.com this summer for details. Release date is set at September 4th, 2009, with a manufacturer's suggested retail price of $19.99.
Yeah, if you remember the... well, of course you don't. But if you, Gamer Nation, remember the oversized cards they had a few years back, there was like a set of 12 or so or whatever it was, that changed the way the game was played and the victory conditions or special abilities and that sort of thing. This looks very similar to that. So that's kind of what they're talking about.
Yeah, it's magic, so I have no idea.
I don't know nothing about magic. More gaming news can be had at our favorite news aggregators, www.gamingreport.com, www.boardgamenews.com, and www.robotviking.com.
Say, I'm looking for some sort of abstract strategy game, something with possibly parasitic conflict or bidding and economics, something with majority control and mass marketing, min-maxing that'll make people want to run away in fear and not play anything other than rock, paper, scissors. Have you got anything like that?
What the heck did he just say? I shot an arrow into the air. It fell to earth, I knew not where. Which is a horrible waste of ammunition, really. Let us help you preserve your arrows by finding the proper target to shoot at and taking steady aim.
Casual. Adjective. Without, or seeming to be without, plan or method. Offhand. See Andy.
Serious. Adjective. Requiring thought, concentration, or application. See, well, anybody but us, really.
And now, on with the show.
Well, Gamer Nation, as you may remember from last episode, and it was a whole week ago, so, you know, it could be a little faulty in the memory department there. Andy and I and Jake, our good buddy Jake, are going to be starting up a Star Wars Saga Edition role-playing campaign. And we've basically decided to set it in the Knights of the Old Republic era. We're going to be looking at the specifically the Dark Wars period of time. Actually, just past the Dark Wars, which you may remember from the events of Knights of the Old Republic 2. That was the entire Dark Wars thing. Yes, one person, three Sith, that was the Dark Wars. Woohoo! Anyway, that puts us about what we like to call 3955 to 3951 before the Battle of Yavin, which is quite a ways back there. Curiously enough, and this may or may not have some bearing on what we're going to be doing in our campaign, we're talking about, you know, about 300 years after the end of the KOTOR 2 events, which kind of puts us in the same realm as, oh, I don't know, Star Wars The Old Republic.
Interesting.
The MMO that's coming out. I don't know, you know, could be maybe a little earlier than that. It's, you know, that's kind of the time frame we're looking at, though.
It's as if you had this planned.
It's weird, isn't it? It's like, Brian's doing something with, like, structure and ideas and plot.
You're completely throwing me off here. I'm not used to this.
You're going
to
be so lost.
Luckily, I have GPS on my lightsaber.
Where's the giant purple shark? Oh.
I need to jump it.
Anyway, I asked both Andy and Jake to create nobles for this campaign, noble character class. And last week's show, we had our kind of our basic setup for the campaign, and, you know, Andy and I sat down and discussed what we were going to do, what we wanted to see, and things like that. And this time around, we are going to be engaging in a discussion about our characters and the specific characters that Jake and Andy came up with. Now, Jake can't be here to help validate his character because he's decided that he needs to go to Arizona.
I don't know what's in Arizona, but he keeps going back there. Wonderful pancakes or something. I don't know what's
going on. And this was such a rapid announcement and departure that I'm sort of wondering, you know, is old Jake in trouble?
Maybe he had a court date.
I don't know. Anyway, so Andy's going to kind of be handling the duties for Jake as well as himself, and he's going to talk about his character, Jake's character, and I will be talking about, if you recall me mentioning last episode, the NPCs I'm looking at essentially gifting our two intrepid nobles with in order to help them manage certain things. So, Andy, let's start with character concept. We kind of covered a little bit of this last week, but I want to go into this a little further. Because, once you got all the details from the campaign that we talked about, what were your preliminary thoughts on what kind of character you were going to do and how you wanted to help to set it up so that it could accomplish its little missions?
It's still kind of a work in progress. My character is going to be probably in his late teens, early 20s, something of that nature. He's a bit of a bratty rich kid. His dad is actually a chancellor in the Senate, and he winds up getting into some trouble, and dad kind of reels him in, and his story will kind of progress from there. I wasn't real sure of how to go along with this, but I was trying to think of a way to tie my character to the Senate in some way or another, and I figured that would work.
Yeah, I like that. Can you give us some highlights from your backstory that you came up with?
Highlights. I don't know how to do highlights.
Highlights for kids.
For the kids, yes. He was raised in the capital city of Belnar. My character is of the Kill race. It goes about him being assigned working to his father. His father being part of the Senate, being a senator, being a chancellor. My character had been left behind on the home planet to get into trouble, as it were, working in the underground, trying to find fun and profit for something to do, not wanting to follow dad's guidelines and stuff. So basically what happens is his character gets in cahoots with some swoop gangs and nefarious characters and winds up undercovering a cell of Mandalorians and getting into even more trouble.
A cell of Mandalorians.
A cell of Mandalorians. A sleeper cell, yes.
Gosh. I wonder if that's going to be a GM plot hook thing later on. I wonder. That could be cool. All right, so I've kind of got Jake's background here. Now, Jake had a lot of difficulty coming up with his background. And part of the reason for this is because Jake isn't really all that familiar with Star Wars. So this is kind of like an entirely new venture for him. He made, I don't know, probably half a dozen phone calls to me. At weird hours, too. It's like, 10 o'clock at night and my phone rings and it's Jake and he wants to know what in the hell an Ithorian is. And what timeline were we in again? So Jake eventually ended up calling on a friend of his by the name of Nader the Hater. So Nate helped him come up with this background. And I actually, for Jake, I kind of like this background because it's got lots of room in it. But this is his Ithorian noble somehow attached to the Senate. This is the background that he came up with. He's an adopted only son of one of the Ithorians' highest families. He was adopted since the family lacked an heir. He's a liaison to one of the Ithorian senators of the Republic. He's fighting for the Republic so as to end other fighting as soon as possible. He's devoted to stopping all violence and will take whatever path to end war the quickest with the fewest casualties. If no side can stop killing, then he will choose to bow out of the war and help refugees. And it's that last sentence that really sells it for me, because that is motivation and goal for a character right there.
Yeah.
And I like that.
I'm actually really impressed with this for as little experience as Jake has with this particular setting and just role-playing games in general. I think this is a very, as short and sweet as this is, it's very sweet, so.
Yeah, it's got lots of good options in there for us. And I'm sure I will be taking advantage of a quantity of it, much to Jake's dismay.
Yeah, I gave you plenty on my character to needle me with.
Yes, you have many, many hooks in there. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking forward to tweaking those little hooks and seeing just how far I can stretch your character for you. And for Jake as well, because this will be quite nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm sure Gamer Nation is just dying to know what stats you guys ended up with. So why don't we start with yours there, Andy, and you can kind of tell them, you know, how that all worked out for you, what method we used, and that kind of stuff.
It was actually after I had already made my character, I went back and I listened to episode 3 of Order 66,
uh-huh.
Entitled Nobles and Non-Combatants. And after I had already finished my character, I listened to this, and I was kind of surprised at how close to being on par I was with Chris and Dave's ideas. And I was actually able to further on that because we're actually using the KOTOR campaign. So I was actually able to come up with a character that gave bonuses for charisma and intelligence, which are two very important ones for the for this class.
Yeah, and that actually worked out really well. So go ahead and give us your numbers. What are your numbers?
Okay, starting out, we have strength of 14, which gives me a +2 modifier. Dexterity of 14, constitution of 14, an intelligence of 17. Wisdom wound up being my dump stat with 13. And charisma came out a nice fat 20.
Yes, your dump stat is 13. Most people, when they have a dump stat, it's like 10 or less. No, and
yeah,
he's got
yeah.
13. And yes, Gamer Nation, I watched him roll the dice, so I can verify all of this. I was pleasantly surprised. Now, Jake, on the other hand, Jake's got some challenges to overcome, as I recall.
He has a few. He's actually got some decent numbers, but there will be some challenges for him. His strength was at 12.
Mm-hmm.
His dump stat was dexterity of 11, so he may have some difficulty if it comes down to any shooting or athletic type of things. Actually, athletics would be strength, but anything to do with dexterity, he's going to have a little trouble with. Constitution of 12, intelligence of 14, and wisdom and charisma, both of 16.
Nice. Yeah.
So as well-rounded as he could be with the numbers he generated.
Right, yeah. He actually did a pretty good job of getting those things plunked down where he needed them. It'll be interesting because he's kind of... I don't know, I have this vision of him as a younger character than yours for some reason. But I guess just young for an Athorian.
Yeah, probably very young for an Athorian as they are quite long-lived.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how those interact and how you two develop a sort of system of covering for each other for your weaknesses and whatnot.
I see a very odd couple type of relationship between the two. I'm thinking Jake's character will be much more ingrained character-wise as being a noble and wanting to be working with the Senate and wanting to end the war that's going on, whereas my character is, you know, upset with Dad because Dad is interfering with his business again and not letting him, you know, just run free and do whatever he wants to do. But I also think that gives me a broad range to grow my character and groom him into this role.
Yeah, I see. I'm kind of, if I were to narrow things down into like two word descriptions, I see you as the angry dilettante.
Yes.
And I'm seeing Jake as the kind of unwilling combatant.
There you go. Yeah, you that's a good description.
Yeah. Okay, so those are the basic stats. And for those of you who have not played role-playing games before, that's the basis of your character. Those are the basic numbers that your character needs in order to do things in the game. Now, within that, there's some more refinement there for other things. And we have skills... actually, there's a whole gamut of things. There's skills, talents, and feats in the Saga Edition, which all help define what your character is and what he can do and what he's good at and what he's not good at.
Yes, you need at least two feats or you'll walk around in circles.
That's right. Stop it. So skills, looking at skills now, you guys have taken a pretty similar set of skills, as I recall.
That's one of the things about the noble is they are truly skill monkeys. I was just flabbergasted at the amount of stuff I got to start out being trained with. Starting skills, this is at level 1. My character is trained in deception, gather information, knowledge bureaucracy, knowledge tactics, perception, persuasion, pilot, treat injury, and use computer.
Nice. And what are your two high ones?
My biggest one would be persuasion. I've got a nice 15 in persuasion.
Sweet.
I took that as a double on that one. And then my two other highest ones would be deception and gather information at 10.
Okay, so the reason you've got 15 in persuasion is because you took
I took skill focus on that, which gives me an additional 5-point bump to that skill. That's an area of expertise for my character.
Right. Okay. So you took skill focus as a feat, which allows you to plunk another 5 points of juice into your skill.
Right.
Okay. So what's Jake looking at skill wise?
Jake is looking at deception, gather information, knowledge, life science, which is kind of unique to the Ithorian, which he gets a bump in that automatically as skill focus,
right?
Just because of his race. Perception, persuasion, pilot, treat injury, and use computer. And I believe Jake also took skill focus for persuasion. So he has a 13 in persuasion and a 12 in knowledge life science.
Okay. So, yeah, again, he's kind of the lightweight version of what you're doing, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah. But he's got that life science thing, which could be interesting.
Yeah, and that actually covers a broad gambit of skill checks that you can delve into and actually come out on top of, so.
Now does that include, like, medical skills like biology and things like that, so he could maybe apply.
I think it gives you a bonus towards it. I need to read into it a little bit further. Ithorian was one of the races I had considered taking, and I'm glad that Jake took it because it's actually a very neat race to work with.
Yeah, it'll be kind of cool to see what's going on there. So yeah, your skills help define, you know, little bonuses to your roles and things you can check against and you know, where your character has their actual abilities and what they do in game terms. Like with life sciences, I'm not gonna expect Jake to know much about alien artifacts, for example. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, much about how to fix a broken speeder or things like that. But I am going to expect him to be able to look at, you know, various plants or animals or things and be able to, you know, take a stab at identifying what they are or what they do or what their interests could be, that kind of thing. That's going to leave some holes in the skills that, you know, that you guys don't have that are going to need to be filled and would normally be filled by other members in a party. And a little later on when I get to talking about NPCs for the GM, I'll explain how I'm going to help cover and fill some of them holes. Alright, so let's move on to your talents. Now, in Saga Edition, they have talent trees, and you kind of cherry-pick what you want to start with off these talent trees, and it's further refinement and larger abilities for your character, and just kind of helps refine how it is your character goes about doing what he does. This is also where you get a lot of the, like, abilities that help buff the group or can help debuff the your opponents and that kind of stuff. So, Andy, starting with you, what talent tree did you get into, and what talents did you take?
Well, I'm looking for it. I took the influence talent tree and took presence as my first level in that.
Okay, what's presence do for you?
Presence allows you to make a persuasion check to intimidate a creature as a standard action instead of a full round action.
Nice. So instead of taking an entire round where the only thing you do is sit there and make funny faces at your bad guy, you can do it much more quickly.
Right.
Okay, that's cool. And Jake's talent tree there?
Jake took the lineage talent tree and took Wealth as his first big kicker there, and it truly is a kicker.
Yeah, that'll be nice later when it comes time for you guys to lose all your credits. I mean, to merchandise.
I figure by round two, I'll have Jake convinced into buying our own canteen and just retiring.
Nice. Okay, yeah, because it's kind of standard that, you know, in campaigns that I set up, that I am all kinds of happy to let you guys buy just anything you want to buy right off the bat. You know, I'll let you buy all kinds of junk and you know, just ridiculous things. You could buy a full-on starship if you wanted to, and I'll be more than happy to let you do that right out of the bag, but by golly, good luck hanging on to it.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, you must not have locked the doors when you left. Your ship is gone.
Yeah. You come back and repair droids have scrapped your ship to repair somebody else's much more important ship.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. There's
nothing left but the skids off the landing gear sitting there where it used to be.
Because really, the more important an object you buy, as far as I'm concerned as a GM, that's a much bigger story hook than say if you just kept it reasonable.
Oh yeah, yeah. If you want to paint a bullseye on something, spend a lot of money on it.
That's right. That's right. See, that's why I don't worry about you buying ridiculous things, because I know that at some point that's going to be probably removed from your ability to use it, just because of the way I do things. You know, and it's not because I'm mean or I like to torture my players or anything like that. It just, it makes a good story if something you spent all this money on and you care about has been taken away from you.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. And in our last Star Wars campaign, I was, you know, there was stuff that the characters would get and lose and whatnot, and they'd be all happy about it. And of course, we had the one who played a scoundrel, and it just drove me crazy. Everybody he came across, he was pulling stuff off of, and I was like, do you have a cart and a bantha to pull all this stuff around with you? I mean, he had like 20 blasters at one point.
Well, let us all pause for a moment and reflect on what happened to somebody's favorite ship in our Serenity campaign. I believe the phrase is scattered across the desert. Okay, so yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was like a giant lawn dart in the sand.
So, yeah, Jake, the Wealth talent, go for it. Enjoy. Yeah. Okay, so those are you guys' talents. Now, we have feats as well, which is further. This feats tend to be more personally oriented in improving your abilities, more combat oriented in general, and so they're just like little perks that help your character do the things he does. So what are your feats there, sir? And you got like a boatload there, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I wound up getting four. The noble gets three to begin with, and the first one is linguist. So you get your home language, and usually basic, and then you get an additional one, and then I believe your intelligence modifier bonus on top of that. So I wound up with six languages that my character speaks.
Oh, nice.
So I'm should be able to deal with most situations that we come across. So
yes, assuming you can talk your way out of it, you'll be fine.
Yes. Linguist. The next one that the noble comes with is weapons pistol and weapons simple. So
yeah, weapon proficiency.
We're not completely in. Hopelessly, you know, defenseless. Good. And then as my fourth one, I took, of course, my skill focus and dumped that onto persuasion.
Right. Excellent. And Jake's feats?
Jake's feats. He also has linguist, the weapons proficiency pistol, and simple weapons. Wow, having a hard time with this. And then his skill focus also on persuasion.
Okay, so you guys, instead of opting for some big, like, generalized, helpful feat, you guys both went for your extra feat for skill focus.
Right.
Excellent. This will be quite amusing as we come down the line. All right, and that kind of completes the basics of the character sheet. I mean, it's, you know, those where most of your numbers and things will come from. You bought some gear, and in spite of everything, you guys managed to keep it reasonable. Mm-hmm. So it'll be hard to take all that away from you.
Yeah, I mean, I took things that I thought would be helpful for my character. Of course, then, you know, an all temperature cloak just for wherever we might end up. A data pad for containing information. Hopefully, you know, working with, you know, if we get a droid or anything like that. A code cylinder for, you know, possibly less than honest working. a comm link to keep in range or keep in contact with the party. And, of course, a blaster pistol.
A blaster pistol. Okay.
Yes.
Excellent. I think Jake's got pretty much the same kit, right?
His is pretty close. Blaster pistol. He took a combat jumpsuit.
What?
Mr. Moneyfied.
A combat jumpsuit?
Yes.
What does he expect to be doing with that? Or should I be asking that question?
I don't know. I think I'm going to shoot him out of a cannon to see how well it works.
Okay. So here's the thing. Chat room is going crazy with suggestions about... Yeah, and we're live in the chat, by the way. I didn't mention that at all at the start of the show, but we're live in the chat room.
Utility belt, there's a good idea.
Yeah, we got aquata breathers, breath masks, utility belts, all kinds of stuff.
Wow, that's... I don't even know if I saw any of that stuff. Aquata breather, that's a great idea. Now, see, that was something... Oh, full-on gamer hit it right on the head. Pacifists need armor to protect their morals. Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you, full-on.
Oh, man.
That's great. Yeah, okay, so there's some suggestions you might want to look at.
Yeah, I may go back in and get me one of those.
I mean, just without the wealth talent, you've got a fair bit of credits left.
Yeah, the if maxed out, the noble can start with 4,800 credits. It's like four die four times 1,200 or something like that, or whatever it was.
Yes, and it is my habit as a GM with starting first level characters. It is my habit to allow you access to the maximum amount of money your roles could produce, because, like I said, I like to take things away from people. And that just kind of encourages it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got some credits left to spend, and Jake has got just...
Oh, yeah, Jake. God.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you get, well, just the wealth talent or wealth ability, I mean, it gives you 5,000 credits extra per level whenever you level up.
Yeah.
And starting at first level. So he got 4,800 credits plus the 5,000 kicker for the wealth talent. So,
yeah.
So Jake's got a couple bucks left.
Right. He's rolling.
I'm picking his pockets.
Yep. He's going to have spinners on his speeder. All right. So you guys have got your basic characters laid out. You've got your backstories laid out. Now, here's the big question. The big question is this. What sort of adventures do you reasonably see your character going on, given the stats that you've got in your backstory and being successful at?
More than likely, I see us being sent into probably a political hot zone that has the ability to become a war zone. We'll probably be sent in as Senate... the word I'm looking for here, representatives,
mm-hmm.
to work out a deal, either, you know, like I said, for border crossings or for, you know, letting the Republic have a base on this planet, or seeing if, you know, this planet is, you know, wants to side with the Republic, how their views of the Sith and the Mandalorians are, you know, and you know, whether, you know, what can the Republic do to help you help the Republic, sort of thing. And of course, I'm sure it will all devolve into, you know, massive amounts of blaster fire, which we can only hope for. But anyways.
But you're no good at blaster fire. I can't help but note.
No, that's where I'm hoping my NPCs will come in.
Yeah. So, okay, here's the deal. Your GM, benevolent individual that he is, yes, has decided that you are going to have an NPC droid. Isn't that nice of him?
Yes, it is. Is this a functioning droid, or is it just a shell?
Would I do that to you?
You've answered your own question.
Oh, right. I keep forgetting. Okay, so if you... let me see here if I can find the page. If you turn to page... What is it in your KOTOR book? If you turn to page 216 in your KOTOR book, you will find a set of stats for a very familiar droid.
Is this a T3 type of droid here?
Oh, come now. A T3 type of droid? Who would do something so foolish?
I'm sorry, what page did you say? 213?
Oh, that was page 216.
Oh, 216. I was 213 is an HK-47. I'm going to have to come in there and smack you. first episode, we all die. Damn it, Jim. yes, the T3-M4.
Yes, T3-M4. That droid there, it's a very nice droid, very well statted out. That is one of the PC droids from Knights of the Old Republic, Knights of the Old Republic 2.
Yes.
You're not getting that.
Damn it.
However, you are also not getting the basic T3 droid. You are going to get something that's a little bit in between those.
Are we getting the Sanford and Son T3?
Well, you know, that would be funny. that would be really funny, actually, especially if it went around playing the theme song. But no, what I'm gonna do is look at the basic T3, and then I'm gonna look at what T3-M4 is according to the book, and I'm gonna find you a happy medium in between those. And this is going to be the droid that you'll use for, like, repairs and security breaches and... Well, security breaches? Was that a hint? Oh!
Was that a slip?
Yeah. I don't know. But anyway, and some piloting abilities and that kind of thing. All right? So it's going to assist you in those areas which you are lacking, both of you. I think it'll work out well. Again, like I said, I will provide the droid, but it will be up to you guys to remember to use it.
Right. And I think that until we've gone through a couple of episodes, I think it becomes easier to do as you move along, trying to realize that you do have NPCs. And I think that beings that our characters are quote-unquote so squishy, as I've heard them referred to as, I hope that won't be a problem for us.
I don't see any problems yet. Yet. And now I'm going to have you turn to, let me see if I can find it again. Here I am doing this live on the show. I don't have anything bookmarked because, well, you know, it just didn't occur to me to do
sense.
That. Yeah. 171 through 175. Mm-hmm. You will discover that there are a selection of Republic Army and Republic Navy personnel.
Yes.
Yes. You will have a Republic pilot of some description.
Okay.
Who will be tasked with making sure you arrive at your destinations, whatever they may be. And you will also have a couple of what I'm going to refer to as escorts, Republic Army escorts.
Aha.
Yes.
Now, would these be the trooper or recon commando type of escorts?
They're, of course, basic troopers.
What? No commandos?
Wow. Why would you have a commando? That would be silly. That would be silly.
That would be awesome.
What kind of crazy GM would give you commandos?
I trump your Rodian huntmaster and drop a recon commando on you.
Yeah. So these guys will, and you know, no, I'm not gonna venture into that because that's giving stuff away. But anyway, these guys will be responsible for doing most of the shooting, should that be necessary.
Yeah, should it be necessary? They wouldn't be there if it wasn't necessary.
Yeah, well, you know, but essentially something other than a blue milk run. Thank you.
A blue milk run, yes.
Yeah. No, but these guys, ostensibly they will be there for your personal security, because you are going to be, after all, representatives of the Republic Senate.
Yes.
And we would not want anything untoward to happen to you.
Well, I certainly don't.
Yeah. And if you believe that...
Yeah, beachfront property, most wisely for
That's
me.
Right. That's right. So, how you know, now, okay, we've gone and we've done setup, and now we've got our characters laid in. How are prospects looking to you?
It's looking very, very entertaining. I'm thinking it will probably start out kind of slow to kind of work us into it, and I'm going to be looking at the carpet very intently, waiting for it to be yanked out from underneath me.
You know the best kind of carpet to yank out from somebody?
Uh-huh.
The kind they don't ever see.
That's right.
So, yeah. That's our characters, ladies and gentlemen. And I think I can officially announce that our first game session will be occurring in 2 weeks' time. Because, as I said, Jake is out of town yet again.
Yes, he's gone all week this week, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. So game night is going to be just you and I. And,
you know, it must be nice to just get to pack up and leave town whenever you want and go to foreign countries like Arizona.
It must be. So our next show probably is going to be a little away from this topic, but we can look forward to seeing this return in part three as we talk about whatever our current adventure at the time is and what the outcome of it is. So you can look forward to that, Gamer Nation.
Yes, and hopefully we won't have gotten killed by then.
No, people don't die, not in these games.
Join us now as we enter a world that many think doesn't exist. A world of strange sights, strange sounds, and pleasant scents. Come with us to... That's What She Said.
Hey, this is Kat. So, I like to plan ahead. Yes, I'm one of those people. I always hunt for the perfect move in whatever game I'm playing. And I'm inevitably three turns from something spectacular when the next player goes and completely foils my master plan. Sometimes this makes me a little cranky. But then I remember that I like playing games, and I get over myself. So what's the moral to this story? Well, being willing to give your master plan a boot to the head can lead to success, but just as frequently, it leads to sound defeats. And if that's something that bothers you, well, you could always give solitaire a try.
That's right, Gamer Nation. If you can't handle losing, go play solitaire.
There's so many responses to that. I can't say any of them.
Because you never lose at solitaire. Oh, no. Well, thank you, Kat. Once again, you have provided the best part of the entire show. Oh, dear.
On the table.
Well, with all the character creation and whatnot, you wouldn't think we had time to play anything. You'd be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We did get to play a game. It was a pretty cool game, too.
It was, actually. Yeah. I've generally been disenchanted with most card games, but this one, I don't know if it's due to the way the game plays or just the fact that it's my favorite monstrous type of beastie that we're dealing with here, but it was a lot of fun.
You know, you know what? We could really annoy Gamer Nation, not actually tell them what it's called, but just talk about the game.
Oh, that would be awesome.
That would be. Okay, maybe not. We played finally the Call of Cthulhu living card game, which is essentially, it's like a regular collectible card game, only without the collectible part.
Which I really enjoy.
Yes, I like that already. It's already my favorite CCG or CG or whatever.
Whatever they want to call it. But yeah, everything you need is right there in the box to get started.
Yes.
And I thought that was it. Would you kick full-on game, rather? He said Munchkin.
Yeah, I'm going to have to kick full-on because there ain't no Munchkin here, baby. It's like Ewoks. Anyway, so yeah, Call of Cthulhu Living Card Game was actually pretty darned awesome. Essentially what you're doing in this game is you have a series of stories which you have to complete. You complete these stories by playing characters that have a series of traits and abilities that can be applied to the stories. You commit to a story with your characters, your opponent tries to stop you, you compare these symbols. Whoever has the most of these symbols wins that particular battle. There are 5 battles per card. At the end of the 5 battles, if there are characters left, you compare their skill levels, and he with the most skills wins that battle. If you were the one who originally committed to the battle, then you get to put a victory token on that card. When you get 5 victory tokens, you then win that story. You win 3 stories. You win the game. And this happened surprisingly rapidly at one point.
It did. I was worried about the game initially, thinking it was going to take quite a while to get through the 3 stories. And you proved me wrong on that one.
Yeah, because about 2 minutes after you said that, it was bang, bang, 2 stories completed and game over.
And game over, yeah. It's very quick. It's very fluid, which I enjoy. And because it has the Cthulhu theme to it, I like it even more because I'm just a fan of the Cthulhu mythos. And Fantasy Flight always does a good job in that realm. So I'm really, really enjoyed this game, and I'm looking forward to doing it again.
Yeah, the box, the initial starting box, whatever you want to call it, it's about $35. And what it comes with is 7 factions. You combine any 2 factions into your deck, plus some neutral cards, and that creates a 52 card deck, is what it is. And that's your minimum. And, you know, everything like a normal CCG, everything has effects and abilities and various numbers and icons and things that mean stuff, you know, once you get into the game and whatnot. And you can literally be playing this game in, I would say, about 20 minutes after cracking the box open. Well, 5 minutes of that's going to include staring at the Cthulhu figures that come with it, because those are really cool.
Yeah, I enjoyed those. I mean, if nothing else, it's worth it just to have 6 plastic Cthulhu to sit on your nightstand.
Yes, indeed. Because that's where I want Cthulhu to be, staring at me. He's on my nightstand.
Staring at you when you wake up in the middle of the night.
That's just all kinds of comforting. Thank you. That's great. No, and you know, you've got a couple of interesting mechanics there. I think we touched on these briefly when I mentioned that I'd purchased this thing. But the one I'm kind of most intrigued by is the way it handles your resource pools for bringing new cards into play. You start out with 3 resource pools, and what happens is on the bottom of every card is a symbol. And if you're going to use the card for a resource, you turn it upside down and you slide it under one of these pools. And then you use a pool to pay for a card. And what happens is you can build up a different number of cards in each pool. Whichever pool you use to pay for your card must have at least 1 symbol in that pool that matches the card. And sometimes what you find yourself doing is overpaying for some small cards, because you can't use just a part of a pool. You have to use the entire pool to pay for the card. There's no leftovers that get applied later. So, like, there was one point where I was paying a 7 resource pool for a 2 cost card, which meant that later on down the road, if I wanted to play more cards, it was going to be a little more difficult, because That pool doesn't refresh until the end of the turn, and it's all, you know, it's a balancing act between what you decide to put where. In order to get a couple of my bigger cards out, I knew I needed to have 7 resources in this pool, so most of my resources that I placed down were placed into this one pool, and I had like a 7, a 2, and a 1, and it really got kind of tricky to balance out how things were going to be brought out and what I was going to use to pay for them with, and I found that kind of an interesting, both interesting limit and an interesting method for paying for your cards.
Yeah, because if you're not careful, I mean, you can wind up, like you said, overpaying because you've got, you know, a couple of small pools in this one large one, but you also have to be careful because if you run out of cards at any point, your game is over.
Yeah, if you manage to deck yourself or get decked by your opponent, your game's over. This is on top of losing because you failed to accomplish the required number of stories, you can also lose by being decked. In other words, running out of cards in your deck. Anytime that you can't draw cards to fill your hand, then your game is over. So there's
right.
that to
and
consider.
And one of the things I fell victim to was one of the story cards. By completing the story, there's requirements on there that you need to follow, and that was dumping out half of my characters that I had on the table.
Yeah,
so
you basically completed a story, and then you whacked yourself with the effects of that story.
Yeah.
And that's basically what handed me the following 2 wins, which, you know, as we always discover when we play games for the first time, it turns out we did something wrong.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm getting used to that. So
which is that if you win a story, you can choose whether that story's effects take place, which we forgot. And Andy felt it was mandatory to carry out those effects, and so he ended up hosing a bunch of his guys.
Yeah, and if I had have done that, I think it would have been a little bit longer, closer game, but yeah.
Yeah. I can see where you were getting to a point where you were ready to start, you know, yanking stories, and yeah, there was a couple of minutes there where I thought, uh-oh, Andy's going to win.
Yeah, well, I had a couple of bigger cards that I was getting into play, but you had enough counters to defeat me on a couple of them, because that one card you had completely removed the terror track of the combat phase, and that was what my Cthulhu cards relied on was terror. So
yeah, and to talk for a minute about the other qualities of the game, the visual qualities and whatnot. This has actually some really interesting art. I found that most of the pictures were quite amusing, in a creepy kind of Cthulhu way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really good art. It's a good presentation. The plastic pieces are quality plastic pieces. It's got a little board that you lay the stories out on, which was very nice. It's got, you know, tokens that you punch out for victories and that kind of stuff. And so overall, you know, really good production quality on the game. Of course, it's Fantasy Flight, so you kind of expect that.
Yeah, and it, like I said, it laid out very well. It played very well. It was very fluid. After the first round of both of us going through a round and playing the cards through, it becomes very intuitive as to how you can play the game. But that's where the strategy part comes in, because there's so many different cards available to you to play.
Yes. And they release updates to the sets, you know, new sets and whatnot, in 40-card packs, where you get every card in the set. And one of the interesting things they're doing with the last 3 or 4 sets is that each of the sets is part of a storyline. So as you buy the sets, you get hints and clues and chunks and pieces of storyline as you go through, which I think makes it interesting.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed this one. I'm glad you finally picked this one up.
Yeah, it was. We liked it. It was really fun. And it was. You know, it's easy enough to play because we were playing it while helping Jake make his character.
Yeah.
So it's not like we really had to concentrate on it to really follow the game and pick up what we were supposed to be doing and what we weren't supposed to be doing. So, yeah, great game. Lots of fun. Reasonably fast. I would say you could probably, once you get used to the rules, play a game in about 45 minutes or so.
Yeah, it does play plays through very well, and it's not Now, to me, it's not as frustrating as Magic is as far as, you know, getting tanked on your resources and stuff like that.
So I would say, yeah, give this thing a shot. If you like CCGs, give this living card game idea a shot and see what you think of it. The end of the show, the end of the show. All hail the end of the show. We have succumbed to its influence once again. There doesn't seem to be any way to avoid it, but we'll keep trying. So we have a request for you, Gamer Nation. There are two fairly big gaming events coming up that Andy and I are sadly unable to attend.
Indeed.
That's right. So what we'd like to request is a private airplane and a... that's not what we're requesting. We're looking for correspondents for our show. People who are going to be going to Gen Con or the Gamma show. We would like to hear from you if you would be interested in being a correspondent. We have a couple of requirements, though. We don't want to take away from your enjoyment of the show or the games that you're going to be playing or your free time or anything like that. So, this would be the kind of thing where you just kind of fit it around your schedule and whatnot, fit it around what you're doing. But our requirements are as follows. You must be able to record audio in some way. And subsequent to that, you must be able to send us those files. And send them to us. And we can negotiate for how this is going to happen, either via email or some other method. You actually have to be able to ask intelligent questions. And I realize that seems like, unnecessary meanness to throw intelligent questions in there. But I have to be honest with you. I've heard a number of podcasts that send people to Gamma, and the questions that get asked are in the nature of, what are you doing here? Well, they're playing games, obviously.
What are you doing here?
Jeez.
TK421, why aren't you at your post?
So, intelligent questions. Questions that are related to gaming. Questions that will also be of general interest to the listeners of Gamer Nation. And, they don't have to be hardcore questions. I'm not suggesting that at all. But they should be questions with some amount of thought behind them that will enlighten both ourselves and our listeners in some way. And this is probably the most important requirement of the whole thing. We can't actually pay you to do this. We have nothing to give to you. We have no giveaways. All we have is credit on the show. So if you go out to Gamma and you record some audio for us, an interview with a designer or some players or, stuff like that, and you send it to us, the only thing we can say is, and our loyal correspondent, Mr. X, has done this interview. That's really all we can do. I'm sorry. We're not rich, but we try.
And if that's not enough, go play solitaire.
That's right.
I've been playing solitaire so long, I have hair on my palms. What's that all about?
Yeah, no. No.
Check, please. Cat.
Dear me. Okay, so that's kind of what we're looking for. If you're interested in being a correspondent to the show, then please contact us at gameon@d20radio.com.
That's right. So until next time, Gamer Nation...
Game on.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and educational purposes only. All specific names, titles, or products mentioned are copyrighted with respective rights holders. Some sounds and music are provided courtesy of soundsnap.com and freesound.org. Reboot is copyright Alliance Entertainment. All original content of this podcast and its related website are intellectual property of Game On and D20 Radio. www.d20radio.com.